Welcome to Ask an Innovator, where we interview senior executives about innovation. You can find us at askaninnovator.com or subscribe with your favorite podcast app. I'm your host, Josh Barker, CEO of City Innovation Labs.
Today, I am with Tim Kelly. So he is the CEO of Nautilus. Welcome, Tim.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a pleasure. So today, we're just going to talk about innovation. So what is innovation to you?
That is always a loaded question. It's one of those words that's very much abused out there.
Yeah.
But when we talk about it in here, try not to abuse the word, especially in healthcare, which is what we're involved in. If we're going to create something new, does it have impact? And then from a company perspective, are we creating value at the same time?
That's great. And that's exactly what I would think too, is you got to be creating value for someone. You can't just be creating something because then it's not innovative. It's not valuable.
Right. Yeah. And if it's not useful, then it won't have impact.
Yeah. Why would you create it otherwise?
Yeah.
So I'd love it if you could give a little bit of background about yourself and Nautilus and maybe a little bit of the story.
Born and raised Chicago guy. So diehard Bears fan and all the other.
You're getting a lot of cheers for that, you know.
Yeah, of course. As far as healthcare goes, I've always been very interested in and worked in healthcare since leaving college. And when we started this company, it was about could we build something that had significant impact in the marketplace. And the guys that came together to start this company had worked for all different types of businesses, J&J, Becton Dickinson, McKesson, TDK. And we came together, started building the software, or at least architecting it, and then launching it at the height of the financial crisis. So we're all about good timing. The whole purpose of our business is we consolidate information on hospital and imaging networks, so patient information, their radiological studies, put it in a universal format, and then prepare it for redistribution. And that means going out on discs, out in the local network, wide area network, CDs and DVDs, which is the predominant format of exchange. And then the latest edition is, of course, going through the cloud.
That's good. So what was the problem statement before Nautilus came into the world? What was the big pain point that you guys were solving?
There's quite a few of them. There's some facets that come together. And I have to go back to my previous business where we were replacing film with CDs. And so the pain point there was film was expensive,
yeah,
heavy to ship, and the digital age was coming in. So Better Medicine was reviewing images on these high resolution screens and having tools where you can manipulate images and essentially just have a better view of the patient. As CDs took over film, it was there was issues with universal formatting. So you could send a CD across the country and they couldn't restore it. So ultimately the patients get rescanned. And still today, about 17% of all radiological procedures are unnecessary duplicate rescans, which adds an ungodly amount of money to the healthcare system.
Is that just because it's the format's unreadable, or like they don't have the correct tools to read it, or a variety of reasons?
A variety of reasons. But ultimately, it's the patient and the whole healthcare ecosystem that pays the cost. Mm. And so it reduces things like speed to care. And when you're talking about speed to care, it can get very critical, like a trauma patient.
Right.
So now the typical protocol today is a CD is burned. That CD, you have to wait sometimes up to 7-10 minutes. When a helicopter is waiting to take a patient, it gets taped under their butt cheek or onto the middle of their chest. And if they get to the trauma center and those images are not restorable, you could lose another 20 minutes of them going to a CT scanner.
Mm, which is incredibly valuable at that point, yeah.
Right. So we were looking at ways to certainly solve that problem, first with CDs, and then applying the same principles to moving stuff through the networks and through the cloud, and also being ultra secure and ultra fast.
And that's a pretty big tall order, because, you know, when you're talking about patient data, that's always a big buzzword, right? Like, oh man, HIPAA and all these types of things.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So keeping it secure is pivotal. So now, is it completely cloud-based, or is there still some element of CD? Is it kind of a little both?
Well, healthcare, with all the high tech that it has, is always very slow to change workflows.
Yeah.
And in this case, some of the workflow has compliance and security issues laced into it. So handing someone a CD today is still completely compliant, and you have clean hands, because HIPAA, there's responsibility on both sides of the fence. So if I hand you a CD, I can wipe my hands clean, and now you're responsible for holding that data. Many of the cloud elements, you're tethered to that patient or to that specialist. And if they are breached, well, then who's paying the fine for that?
Right.
And so a lot of sites and facilities haven't adopted the cloud yet for fear of a breach. And there have been some significant breaches out there. And healthcare is the number one target for hackers.
I believe it. How did you guys find this problem to solve? It just, I mean, obviously, it sounds like you were working in this space prior. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's the evolution of distributing medical information.
So you were just doing these films, like you said, you were just kind of digitizing them or trying to transport the films? Is that what it was?
Replace them with CDs.
So you were solving your own pain point then at that one point because you were doing this process.
Right. And that was first just about capability. And then it starts to become more about convenience and improving process and workflow and adding lots of other bits and pieces of information from labs, financial data, reports, anything else that gives a more holistic view of a patient.
Sure, sure. Now, did you go and, you know, when you had this pain point, did you just make the assumption that, hey, there's got to be more people like me having this pain point? It's got to be across the industry, or did you literally pick up the phone and call a few people? Like, how did you end up validating that, hey, this is actually a business we could do?
Again, really just evolves. It's just the natural course of this.
Progression.
So CDs are still the predominant format of exchange, but everyone knows that CDs have a definite end of life coming.
Yeah.
There's no longer any other industry using them. I mean, it used to be for marketing, banking, of course, music.
Oh, yeah.
That's all gone.
And they don't even have laptops now with like CD readers or DVD readers.
Right. You can't even buy one. You have to buy external drives.
Yeah.
And so the last vestige is medical exchange. And so its time is limited. But with that, we have to offer something that gives them compliance. So that means security. And then, of course, still have ease of workflow. And so when we look at designing our products, but can we make that even easier than handing someone a CD what they're used to doing from the same interface that they're already burning CDs from? And that's what we do.
Now, are these huge files?
Getting bigger all the
getting
time.
Getting bigger. Yeah, because the resolution's got to be increasing on some of these.
Right, it's increasing. So people always hear about slices, like, oh, it was a, you know, now there's a 128 slice CT, and then it just keeps going up, and resolutions are going way up, and the monitor qualities are going up to view these images. But it's become volumetric, where you can have a 4 gigabyte study.
Wow. Holy cow. And someone's got to have, if it's in the cloud, someone's got to have some fast internet to pull down 4 gigabytes.
Yeah, so you have to have ways to move that data fast. So we have great compression algorithms that are completely lossless. And then, of course, we use things like Google Cloud for content delivery because it's super fast.
You know, what's interesting is like this is really going nerd for a second, is you almost have to do lossless, don't you? Because
it has to be lossless.
If you did lossy, I mean, they could see it's like a smudge or something and be like, well, what is this, right? I mean, like...
Well, it can become, the bigger concern is it becomes unuseful for what they call primary review. So you can't do a diagnostic review on it if it has any loss, and that would be a problem.
Yeah, that would be a big problem. When there's an innovation that comes to the table, there's other things that have to change. How is Nautilus impacting the overall healthcare? Have you seen some changes had to happen before Nautilus and after Nautilus, and how is Nautilus just making that impact across the industry?
Well, us and our competitors, we're all trying to do the same thing and drive this adoption to the cloud and drop the CDs. Seeing that impact and we saw the same thing with film when they finally dropped film entirely and said, we're all digital now with our storage systems and digital exchange, which were discs. That's what we're looking for here with the cloud when they finally say, we don't have a single CD burner at this facility. It's strictly electronic exchange, and that's starting to happen finally. So we're at that tipping point. I think it's going to go very fast in the next 24 months.
Where do you see different areas evolving in terms of your business? Where is that pushing the envelope? I mean, you've probably got mobility on one too, right? Being able to pull up on a mobile device. And what are some other ones that you're seeing from you guys' perspective?
Yeah, you're right. The mobility is a huge factor because medicine's becoming more specialized. You know, you used to have your GP that could fix, the little Johnny's broken arm.
Yeah.
And then, it's become, now you have orthopedics, but now it's not just orthopedic. You have your arm specialist, and not just the arm specialist, the lower extremity of the arm. So you get into specifics like the wrist and even fingers that they're very specialized, which is great. So you know exactly what can be fixed and how. And but with that, patients are taking more responsibility for their information. So years ago, obviously Google and Microsoft thought that was going to come pretty quickly and offered free storage and so forth, but the problem is no one trusted them. So it'll be patients taking this responsibility on themselves, finding companies like Nautilus and our competitors to say, I'm going to use them to store my data, and I'll use that facility to send to my doctor or to my specialist and have control.
So it'd be the patient's control over their data.
Yeah, as far as medicine becoming consumer-driven, that trend's going to continue. So you see more and more patient portals where you're able to have more transparency with drug prices and stuff like that, some tools out there, and that consumerism will continue in healthcare.
Walk me through with your software, if I'm using your software, let's say I'm the trauma patient. That process, do I have access to the data or is it strictly for the end providers?
In a case like that, it would be from the facility to the trauma facility. So the professionals would just be managing the data. But then, if you request it and by your own patient rights, they have to send you that data. So you could say, please send me my studies and other information. They send it to you. In our system, you get an email on how to access that data. And then you could choose to store it for free with us or just look at it and it expires over time, or there's a few different ways you manage that data.
Does that happen frequently?
Well, we have patients sign up every day.
Yeah?
Yeah.
To
So
view their provider that took a scan and they want to see what the scan like that see it themselves and very interesting.
So I mean, even with the CDs, I mean, we saw that for many years where they were requesting them, so they had a copy for themselves. So it'll be the same now. You'll just store it in the cloud online. And people are going to take responsibility for their own information.
We're seeing that a lot. I mean, for mobility, talking about that for a second, are you seeing that providers and patients need to have that mobileness to see scans right away?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and so they even want to look at their images and have, there's some docs that'll log in and point to things in the image, and that helps in a lot of ways, because let's say you're doing a shoulder surgery and you're not really sure what you're getting involved in, so you're looking, the doctor and the hospital, they want patient consent. So you could walk someone through looking at their own shoulder, this is what we're fixing here, and point it out to them and have it make sense to the patient, and so they know that what they're involved in, and can't say after the fact, I didn't know what was actually getting fixed. And so patient consent will be driven with this. Yeah, there's a lot of great elements that will come with this. The telehealth is growing at a very rapid pace.
I was just going to say that telehealth, that's what I was assuming. Because with imaging, I mean, like my experience with telehealth, because I was able to use it with my provider, was call the doctor, had some condition. He's like, take a picture, and send it to him. He figured it all out right on the spot, wrote me a prescription like virtually. It's really kind of cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And you have a lot of specialists out there that drive around to look at images, to talk to their referring doctors. So these specialists don't have to travel as much as they used to. And when you add up those hours over a year's time, when they can have a really good telehealth tool, and we're involved with that. We're involved with some telehealth companies where they want to move the data to that specialist right away, where they can view it on their diagnostic workstation. Now, through, let's say, the FaceTime type of telehealth applications, you can't do that. So that's why we're partnering with some of those companies.
That's a pretty cool thing. So your imaging solution works with some telehealth providers to be able to do some of that stuff.
Right. So if they say, yeah, send me the original image, I'd like to see it, they can just have it on their desktop 30, 40 seconds.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Now, I'd imagine there probably has there ever been a need to when they're explaining it, they're doing it over distance where, telehealth, I'm envisioning in my head if my doctor is walking me through an image on the phone, is he being able to like highlight stuff on his iPad and be like, oh, look, take a look right here.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really neat. Yeah, there's some companies that are just starting now that are hiring doctors so that patients can even pay to have a doctor walk them through their scans.
Oh, wow. That's pretty
which
cool.
Which is pretty neat. And that's not even for patient consent. It's just for understanding. So instead of just going on Google and
Googling
at images and saying, I think I have this.
It's like worst case scenario always.
Right. And doctors don't like that. So they'd much rather have someone call and they give them 15 minutes and say, no, this is what you're looking at here.
Sure.
Yeah. Because basically overall, radiology is dictating healthcare today.
Yeah.
Surpassed the cost of pharmaceuticals in 2014, which no one thought that would happen.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not stopping anytime soon. It's the imaging is becoming much more complex, much more advanced. And in our lifetime, we're going to see atomic level imaging. And that's remarkable stuff.
Oh, yeah. You know, and the one thing I've been curious about, too, is as you were saying that and as we were talking, there's this new thing I found online that with just one image, they can make that like an image of someone's face, let's say. Let's say there's an image of your face, Tim. With one image, they can actually make a video and make it look like you're talking and using your hand gestures. And so that's with AI. And then AI is also being used to find things that humans wouldn't be able to find in images and text. And is there any applications? Because my mind goes to, is there anything out there that's, hey, seeing these scans and almost helping doctors recognize things more quickly?
Oh, yeah, that's a huge part. If you go to the RSNA show now, which is every year in Chicago,
yeah,
there's a huge AI section. Everyone's getting involved in it. When that actually replaces radiologists, I don't see that happening because the human element of making final decision-making is pretty critical still. And
it's going to have to be assisted for a while.
Right, assisted.
Yeah.
But I think the real value comes in if you look at everyday applications. You can have a CT scan that has 5,000 images in it. And for a doc to say he's going to look at all those images is just not feasible.
Yeah.
So to have software scan it and say, these are some anomalies you should look at, can really reduce time. And again, we're talking about speed to care and better medicine and those kinds of elements, which is very important. About a year ago, we partnered with a Stanford UCSF AI initiative called Breast We Can, which is to collect 5 million breast images just for what you were talking about. So they'll be analyzed, and it's to then reduce the false positive, false negatives, and have better results in reading these images. And they're not the first to do this, but I think with the credibility that they have out of those two institutions, they should do a pretty good job. But what are the pipes for collecting that data?
Oh, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's where I'm seeing the future. Obviously, we're all seeing that, AI and being able to assist in making these decisions. And it's a pretty cool future to be able to see the assisted part of things. And
it's really neat.
Yeah. Any other things that you see on the horizon for Nautilus?
Well, just continue to be that party that solves all these problems with the OEMs, with our sites. We've been growing more into the what we call the underserved market, so clinics all the way down to independents, where you could have a single practitioner with an ultrasound machine, or could be a chiropractor with a digital x-ray. They're all adopting some type of imaging in their practices now.
Sure.
So we see that as being able to help the, not just be in the institutions where we're at now, but also support the entire surrounding healthcare community. And as it keeps advancing, as I mentioned before, to atomic level imaging, we want to be involved in that in the next 5 to 10 years.
Pretty cool stuff. Now, another question I've got is learnings. So through Nautilus, what are some learnings that you've had in innovation in general?
Oh, boy.
Probably a lot.
Yeah, a lot. It's an endless, it'd be a very thick book. But we've had a lot of learning experiences. If I go right to the beginning with our software, it was no file-driven menus, have it icon-driven, very intuitive, macros built in. So as someone was going to go through a complex process, they'd go through without realizing it.
Yeah.
So lead them to next logical steps in the process. And one of our mantras was, if we have to create a service manual or any type of learning manual, we failed in our design.
Yeah.
So that was very unique as far as medical software goes. With that, our customers have been, I don't like the saying the customer is always right.
Yeah.
But you have to listen to them.
Yes.
And prioritize what their wish list is, and does it make sense for the market, or are they just throwing stuff out there to see if they can have you build something that's not necessary, which is easy to do.
It is.
And then with that, your business models, they have to change and evolve with markets too.
Yeah.
So our whole business was based on integrated systems. So the whole computer, everything being sent out the door, pre-configured. And now it's moved more into, hey, register online, download some software,
yep,
be part of the cloud and get started in 3-4 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's a
complete change.
Yeah, complete change.
Yeah. That's good. Adapting to the market, that's innovation right there. The market changes, being able to adapt to it quickly. Yeah.
Right, right.
Now, lessons learned in terms of innovation. Any other lessons we learned before we move on to the next point?
I could go on all day about those.
So any lessons learned that you would feel as a last ending point for people to apply to their business?
Keeping that ear to the ground and
listen to users.
Yeah, listen. Looking at the models, it's so easy to say, well, look at what this company did and that worked for them, so we're going to emulate that. But it doesn't mean it applies to your market. Now that you've mentioned it, I just gave a talk about this a little over a week ago. Our original business model with our cloud was a pure pay-per-use model, which seemed great. I mean, just sign up, you send a study, it costs you $1, and you have no capital approval then at major institutions, just get going with it. Sounds great. Everyone loved it. We were pitching to them, so we thought we were definitely on the right path. But it just, they couldn't commit because it just felt too open-ended. So you give a baseline, okay, let's call it, you know, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, and you'll be up and running. They're much more comfortable with that. A pay-as-you-go model doesn't work in our business. So you look at all the different ones out there, freemiums, there's different hybrid models. You have to find the one that fits your industry and your business.
Yeah. And you're hitting on a point for me, which is a lot of my background is customer research, looking at that and looking at the data. And what resonates with me is doing, it's one thing for the customer validates, but it's one thing for the customer to say, oh yeah, I would pay for that. And then another thing for them to actually enter their credit card and actually do it.
Right.
So
right.
That's what you're hitting on too, of like, they even may have validated like, oh yeah, that sounds pay-per-use. That makes sense. And it's, but when push comes to shove and you're like, you ready? They're like, well, wait a minute. Like,
yeah,
I don't think so.
Yeah. Cause we've done focus groups and we realized they were all worthless.
Right. Right. Right.
Real market test tells you exactly what you need to know. Do they respond? Are they?
Yes.
As you said, did they put the credit card in?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then that brings another, I mean, it could bring another point out is what you're saying it without saying it is data is key of understanding, of keeping that data of, do our users put it on our credit cards? Like how many? What's the conversion rates and all that stuff?
Right.
Well, thanks for your time, Tim. Really appreciate it. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Ask an Innovator. Visit us on our website, www.askaninnovator.com. This podcast has been sponsored by City Innovation Labs.